Welcome, everybody, to Broadcast Team Alpha. We're going to do it again tonight. We're bringing you cutting-edge conversation, and we're going to explore the quantum possibilities. I'm Nori Love. My co-host is Augie Nast. He's going to tell us about our wonderful guest who's graced us with his presence again. But before we go and get started, I just want to thank you guys, as always. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for the lively chat that always goes on. Thank you for the super chats. Thank you for connecting with us offline. If you're new to Broadcast Team Alpha, you can connect with us at broadcastteamalpha.com. Augie and I also have a mastermind connection meeting every Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern. It's where we get together and we intend for wonderful, benevolent, beneficent intentions. We create an intention each week, whether it's weather patterns or certainly it's always peace, health, individual health, group health. We intend for that. We go on a beautiful meditative journey with lots of vivid imagery to evoke the feelings of what we are desiring to create. And we've had a lot of success. So if you want to come check us out, drop an email to the THE Mastermind Connection, all one word, at gmail.com. We'll send you the link. You can join us on Sunday. We have a free discussion of I don't mean to say free. We have a lively discussion. That's probably even better at 3 o'clock. So if you want to hang around for that too, we would love to have you. So Augie, let's commence with our incredible guest.
Yeah, this is going to be wonderful. Yeah. This is going to be one of the shortest introductions that I have think I've ever done, because everybody knows our guest, Brad Olson. Except for maybe two guys, one down in Bolivia and one in Eastern Mongolia, and that's about it. So, but for those two guys, I want to mention a few things. He is an explorer. He's a world traveler. He's an author of, 10, 12 books or something like that. And he's a researcher, videographer, event producer, and a speaker on conferences, which he's going to do one next month over in Sedona, he's just told me. And I'm really considering going up there because that sounds really interesting. And of course, he is on radio and TV shows and stuff everywhere. And now he has written many books, and three of them is in the esoteric series. And besides this one is my favorite. I want to talk about that one just a little bit later. And I feel really privileged to have him with us today, because he is such a legend in his own time. He, when you talk to people about esoteric things or the paranormal, his name very often comes up. And tonight we're going to talk about something that will bring you far outside of the box again. I asked him if we could talk a little bit about something called the looking glass. That is an very old technology that is actually able to see and predict future in different timelines. And from there on, I have no idea where we're going, but it's going to get interesting. So welcome to the show, Brad.
Welcome, Brad.
Hi, guys. Wow, thank you for that very kind introduction. I feel very honored and humbled. I often describe myself just an ordinary guy who's very much into extraordinary subject matter. So if I can help people unpack some of these really complex issues, which is the zeitgeist of our time. I mean, we are the generation who is really making sense of ET contact, all the technology that goes with it, including the looking glass technology, and so much more, that it's just my honor and privilege to be able to speak with your audience today and to see you guys again. Thank you for having me back.
Absolutely. And some of our listeners, they like to surf your website of the guest while we are talking. Sure. So I'm going to get your website out there so they can have that. That's cccpublishing.com. com. That's where you'll find all his books and a lot of the stuff that he's done. So now that's out of the way, and now we'll talk to the guy in Eastern Mongolia so he get up to date too.
That's my target market out there, Eastern Mongolia. Really huge book buying crowd. Yeah, especially my new book, Beyond Esoteric, translating it into Mongolian. That's even a language.
That's good.
I'm curious about the Looking Glass. I know, you know, I'm jumping in the deep end here, but
yeah,
I think there's so much to talk about there, and I would love to hear about it. You know, I don't know that much about it, so you could like bring me up to speed. That would be great.
Sure. Well, Augie, you mentioned in the pre-interview about the Vatican having a version of the Chronovisor. And my understanding is they were using frequencies, and frequency can tap into not really memories, but the entire fabric of space-time has basically a frequency that can be tuned into, so that the first thing the Vatican was discovering was that they could pick up sounds. And then they were identifying those sounds from the past, and then it got into a grainy video. And one time, human Jen Psaki starting to tap into this technology. And the Chronovisor is also described by Andrew Bisaggio, who is in Project Paperclip and was doing time travel experiments. So I look at the whole subject matter of time travel and peering back in time and even looking forward as the Looking Glass technology, because it also incorporates the stargates, which have been found around the world. And so this is actually very ancient technology. And it said this is the reason why on the second invasion of Iraq, the first thing that the Americans did was take the museum in Baghdad, because in that museum was a stargate that Saddam Hussein had discovered in one of the ziggurat ancient locations that they were doing archaeological digs. Augie, what do you want to add a little bit of that?
I know that was a big reason for the invasion, because they've wanted that.
Yeah,
because they didn't really know what it could do, but I think they probably figured it out, because once they get their hands on something, they would never let it go. Now, I know you should talk on the Looking Glass later, but let me say a few things about that Chronovisor that the Catholic Church had commissioned. It came around because there was a recording that they were doing, and there was a blank spot on the recording, but in there they found the voice of someone that was basically doing the recording. That was his dad, but his dad had been dead for many years. And then he started to think about it. Maybe there is technology here that we can replicate. And then they started doing experiments, and they couldn't figure it out. So they assembled a lot of bright minds in order to create a device that could retrieve recordings that has been placed into the fabric of space. And it's not these recordings and the voice recording, they're not placed in just in the air. It is along ley lines that they are being recorded. And, you know, they go crosswise and lengthwise, and along these, that's almost like neural networks. You know, the memory of the brain is placed along the neurons. And same here, when there is recordings of something, it's placed along the ley lines. And this is what they figured out. Einstein was working on it. Nikola Tesla was working on it in the very first stages. And Wernher von Braun, and there were many others that was really deeply into quantum mechanics, and they were able to figure this out. So they could actually read recordings from the past, but it came from outside of the physical, where also you have accessible to the future. Based on decisions that is done today, you can predict timelines into the future, and they were able to perfect this. And Then, of course, it disappeared. We really don't know where it is. But maybe you have an idea on that, Brad, because this is one thing that it's really fascinating to me.
Yeah, well, I think the Vatican Chronovisor, we can consider that the cabal, the globalists, the moneyed elite, the black hats, they got it. And what they did with it was trying to game the timeline that was in their favor. And we'll get into timelines and what this this yellow cube or chronovisor could do. But just to give your listeners a little further history of these devices, as I mentioned, the Vatican picked it up. Maybe they had some help, but I have a picture in Beyond Esoteric of one of the stargates that was found in Egypt. So I think the one that Saddam had would be similar to this, which was modeled in Hollywood, and that's where they get these things spinning, and then they're actually creating a little wormhole where you can go to different parts of the planet, but also off planet, and presumably even far, far away. And so this, again, is a way that they're traveling through space.
No. Oh, boy. He went in a wormhole.
Oh, Brad, no.
Come back. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, he disappeared right in the wormhole.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man. Well, I'm sure that
he'll be back.
Yeah, he'll be back. In the meantime, we'll just carry on.
That's interesting. So is this chronovisor that, you know, you always see the picture of certain people in the Vatican, and there's like a big round lighted dome and people put their hands on it. Is that what it is, or?
I don't think so, because in the description of the chronovisor, they used a CRT tube, kind of like a TV set tube, you know, the big ones that we used to have. And that was the display that they had.
Interesting.
Yeah. So there was just voice and pictures both with it.
That's interesting.
That could turn very interesting.
Mac, can you call Brad? Retrieve him from a parallel universe? Mike said, not only did Brad drop off, but you two are split into three screens. We are? Oh my goodness, we are. So our head. Oh, okay. Can we get our friend back? Thanks for that, Mike. Hey, Carl. What is the formal name of that chronovisor? Is it chronovisor?
Yeah.
Carl. Hi, Carl. It's chronovisor. Chronologic.
Yeah, something like that. In fact, if people really want to know what it is all about, go to broadcastteamalpha.com. Go down in the videos. I did a video probably, close to a year ago now, where I explained the chronovisor and what it was and how it worked. This is a really interesting subject, and it relates directly to the looking glass, which I'm hoping we can get Brad. Hey, there it
is. Sorry about that, you guys.
Did you go in a wormhole?
Yeah, I did go down a wormhole.
I thought so. Welcome back.
I thought you disappeared into a black hole.
Yeah. Well, I think I was leaving off with the stargates they found, and including what they found in Iraq. So this is very ancient technology. And then, as you said, Augie, Tesla was tapping into it. Other people that were looking at space and time, Einstein, were also discovering it. So these independent discoveries were coming up as well. And so take us up to the forward age. There's also an extraterrestrial element in this as well. And in this looking glass umbrella, you also have the Montauk chair, and then you also have this device called the Yellow Cube. And the story behind the Yellow Cube is it was part of the Griotta Treaty, which was, I consider it illegal, and really it should be revoked if it still has power, but it does come new on the fourth year of every year. So the Griotta Treaty is up for renewal again in 2 years. And basically in 1964, it was demonstrated to the US generals in an exchange for technology for these malevolent ETs to have their base here, to do human abductions, cattle mutilations, all this stuff that got covered up in the paranormal, in exchange for drunken sailors who just wanted technology and would basically whore out the planet that they did, allowed these terrible experiments against humans to take place just so they could get the technology. And the technology of 1964 was a demo of the Yellow Cube. And it's such a profound device. I put it a representation of how I would, and my designer envisioned what it could do. And in the middle, you see pre-Sans Egypt. We did a mocking rendering of that. And then chapters of the book all the way around. Looking back at a moment in time with exact clarity, and this is a holographic image generator, so you could see things even in your own past lifetimes that would make your hair stand up on your arms. It would be so uncanny because you knew it was true. It connects with you on a soul level. So the assembled generals that year were very Christian men, and it was asked of them, what period in history would you like to see? And they wanted to see the final passion play of Jesus Christ. And according to this history, he was a very real man, and he very much died a horrific death on the cross. And the generals were assembled, and they were watching this whole play out as if it were in real time on a holographic image generator, which had a yellow book. It was about the size of one of our phone books, and it had a yellow hue. It was almost like one of those hard windows you see in bathrooms, a hard plexiglass. But it had water in moving parts too, and that had something to do with its ability to look at specific moments on the timeline.
Wow.
And just pull them out and generate a holographic representation. So you can see how important and how powerful this technology would be. And so the first hands it fell into were the Black Cats. And they kept trying to game the system to their advantage. So basically they would stay in power, that they would do this new world order and put the planet on the worst kind of fascist lockdown you could ever imagine. We'd be like the movie Avatar in the future, going around planet to planet and just exploiting the hell out of everyone. But something happened in our past. So Alex Collier, who has been an Andromedan contactee from the time he was a young man, he's now getting up there in age. So really his whole adult life, he has been in contact with a benevolent ET group called the Andromedans. And they were very specific in saying that after 9/11, when the towers came down, the Pentagon, that this was a false flag. And this would be the beginning point of an incredible tyranny, which would be this timeline too, that these globalists are trying to game the system for decades using this device. Because they could see that the future is nothing but a series of probabilities. And if they were to game a certain probability, the outcome would be sometimes what they desired. But they were also foiled at many crossroads by events that they couldn't make happen, that didn't come true. And therefore, their timeline two scenario was delayed. And this is my understanding what takes us up to this modern day. There were supposed to be a lot of false flag attacks that would have put us way more into lockdown like you couldn't imagine. and taken us down this very thorny path. For example, at the 2012 Summer Olympics in London, there was meant to be a big terrorist attack. They would say that, terrorist attack, blame it on the enemy that they want to blame it on. But in the opening ceremony of the Olympic Games, it was one of the creepiest things I've ever seen on public display. That and the opening of CERN, when they all came out of the tunnel and these demonic fashions. And CERN is also part of the Looking Glass umbrella too. That is creating an artificial portal. And this is very dangerous too. And when you get this technology in the hand of these madmen who are working in conjunction with some malevolent ETs, it's a very prickly pair. And so that's why we have to define our terms, and we have to know what we're up against, and also to understand this stuff. Now, there's this group called the Guardians of the Looking Glass, who are now the white hats, who have control, at least have control of a version of the yellow cube, where they're able to also look at future events. And their whole goal right now is to pre-announce. Okay, so this is like pre-crime from that Tom Cruise movie, that they are able to tell when the next planned false flag is, because they have seen using the Looking Glass technology. And the last one, get this, was foiled because of it. It was that guy with gas mask in the New York City subway, that it was supposed to be a really horrific massacre. He wounded 29 people. As far as I know, nobody died, and they caught the guy, and it was a bungled attempt. So the New York in April failed because this pre-knowledge is getting out there. And now the next one, according to the Guardians of the Looking Glass, and I would encourage people to independently look up those videos and listen to them and watch them and read them yourself. Make up your own mind about this. But the next big one is supposed to be in Washington, D.C. next month. And it's another anthrax scare. And it's not to say that these false flags people don't die, because they do die. But that's how ruthless they are in trying to game the system here and make their future outcomes come true.
You mentioned CERN, and I just got to say something. I think it was probably 2 or 3 years ago now, there was one of the people that run the operation at CERN. He was speaking before the European Council, the EU Council, and he said, we have to apologize for you, apologize to you, says, because we destroyed the world. We are in a parallel universe now. And then he went on with his speech. There was just about a 4-second comment at the beginning of the whole thing, and nobody questioned it afterwards. Did you ever hear that?
I think I heard versions of that, but didn't get the actual video clip. That would be great to review and see about that. Mm-hmm. Well, that brings up a very good point, Augie, and that is alternative universes and alternative even aspects of ourselves. I think that's what deja vu is, that we do have, maybe it's, and also in our dream time, we have this other stage of consciousness that's part of us. The way we dream at night, does it's like us, but it's not quite us. And having this alternative reality running in parallel. So just to go back to what Alex Collier said, so the Andromedians pinpointed Earth on 9/11/2001 as being the beginning point of this incredible tyranny that would spread out to them and the rest of our galaxy and even beyond. It was going to get bad, and Earthlings were really part of the problem. Yes, we've been gamed, and yes, we've been morphed and hybridized, including with reptilian DNA, which is happening right now, and they became a real menace. So the Andromedians went to the council, the Galactic Council, in a very narrow vote, because most were hands off, we don't want to get involved. But in a very narrow vote, they said, yes, you can go back in time and intercede on behalf of Earth and change very subtly, but change very important events. So they just either don't happen, as we saw with London in 2012 and other events, or minimize the damage so that it's not going to take us down the timeline to timeline. You see, because timeline mm-hmm. one is what we're meant to do. This is the destiny of humanity and humans on this planet. We are going to reach a golden age of sorts where there will be no more war or poverty and degradation of the planet. We're going to restore this garden planet the way it is. But in the meantime, we're stuck here on prison planet because it's been designed that way for us. And there's so many things that keep us in this lockbox. And one of them is if we were to go down timeline two, humans would never wake up. We would never have a great awakening. And so many of this great technology would just be squandered away or pilfered off by the most powerful to use for their advantage. And that would not be timeline one. Timeline one, timelines are kind of like a river. Look, each one of us has our own timeline. So there are really a clear, almost infinite amount of smaller timelines, but the big flow of humanity on our timeline to reach this golden age is like a river that's just raging. It's going the course it's going to go. And so all these little manipulations they've tried to do to game the system are like just building a little canal. So you can get a little play off of that, but you're not going to change the course of that flowing river. And so we are on this course to do it. Whether it's going to be in our lifetime or they're going to delay it even longer and longer remains to be seen. But I think we can pull this off real soon, actually. And all of it has to do with the Great Awakening. And that's how these false flags are going to get called off. And if they never happen, there is a singularity event coming up in 2030 that will be the defining moment of humanity. So we're really coming down the final stretch here, and this is when it gets really exciting, but also pretty scary. And we're right on the edge too with all this.
Yeah.
Another thing I didn't see the speech, but I read a transcript of it, and that was on the European Council again. They were one of the speaker, I think the speaker over there, he made the comment in one speech, we are in communication with people from other worlds and they are worried about us. So we have to contain ourselves.
Yep.
And that was another one. You may have heard of that one too. And it just, once in a while, they sneak stuff out there, kind of in the middle of things, and then they just ignore it afterwards. So they can't say that, well, we told you.
So Terry in the chat room said, we have 8 years to do our part in making things right. And then Carl said, my understanding is that Ashtar, the commander of the intergalactic fleet that's stationed above the Earth, has been slowly but surely eliminating most, if not all, of the leaders of the Dark Cabal. Yeah.
And that is how they're interjecting their will, taking out, which we don't even know, we don't have a reality for the alien bases and all the horrific things they've been doing, genetic experiments. Who's behind that? And for the most part, it's a non-human entity that is here harvesting what they want, what they need. This is what the whole cattle mutilation phenomenon is all about. They'll just take what they need, skin you alive if that's what they want, and then just drop a carcass in a field. It doesn't happen as much anymore. They're cordoning those off to no-go areas in national parks. I don't know if you guys know this, but especially the big parks out here in the West, there are always no-go zones. There are many dozens, if not hundreds, square mile area zones that are no humans allowed. Mm-hmm. And some of the whistleblowers are saying that this is where they're dropping the cattle carcasses and possibly even human remains in these target zones. Yeah, just out of sight, out of mind. They don't want to spook the humans. And when they would take the cattle carcasses back to the same field where they were taken from, and oftentimes they'd have branches from falling from the sky and be a big dead 1200 pound bull laying in a snowy field with no footprints. So how do you explain that other than some kind of anti-gravity technology that would be able to do that? And now I understand they're just taking cargo loads full of trains right into the deep underground military bases and doing what they will, and maybe not even taking them out anymore and dropping them, just dissolving them in acid or something. But it's still going on, and Earth is like a zoo to many of these malevolent ETs. And because we have not even been told they exist, Nori, and this is to the point, this Galactic Federation feels they could just pluck them out whenever they can catch them, trying to flee off planet or from underground bases. Now, I understand that's a little bit of a thornier issue. It's harder to get them that way. But one by one, if they keep taking them out, then humans will be left to our own devices to see if we can put together this golden age, this great awakening. So for the very first time, humans may be operating in a sense that they're not being manipulated by malevolent telepathic ET Archon energy that can trick and fool and make most people believe what is not real. So now finally humans are going to have the chance to just have our own awakening, if that's what we can do with the tools we have without being manipulated anymore.
Yes. So Carl said, no, Ashtar's group is helping the humans to overcome the darkness. I think that was clear in what you said the first time, Carl. We're with you. So.
All right. We're at the bottom of the hour here. And hey, Mac, do we have the video that we were going to show at the bottom of the hour? Okay, then run that, and then we will be right back afterwards, because that video is very explanatory all on its own. I don't need my comment. Okay, now I can comment. When you watch that little clip, get in touch with Nori. I have seen some of the things that she's doing with people that she's counseling on health and other things. Just talk to her. I think you'll be much better off, because there's some really good things here for you. So anyway, that was my comment.
Thank you. But we'll also be... having kind of like a parallel, if you will, a little parallel universe, the health and well-being and lifestyle show, because no matter what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, maybe, you know, it's 8 years, maybe it's 80 years, you know, we have to live here on the planet, and we have to live here in these bodies. And for a long time, I think many of us, you know, we're digging in the spirituality, you know, just so wrapped up in spirituality that, you know, we forgot about this vessel that carries us around. And the truth is that there's a whole other pathway to spirituality that you can get to through the physical. So that's coming up, guys. So that's what that was about. So Augie went in a wormhole.
We lost him. Well, I was going to bring up the Q post, which was back in November 11, 2019. So 11-11, that's kind of interesting. And it said very simply this: Project Looking Glass, ? Going forward in order to look back, Q. That's pretty profound in such few words. Going forward in order to look back can mean a lot of different things. But I think in regards to Project Looking Glass, it is bringing into the future these series of probabilities But knowing what our past is also crucial to unlocking what the future may bring. Mm-hmm. Because with the looking glass, we would have an uncritical account. In fact, what if we all had them on our smartphones that we could just queue up a little holographic display, all of us? Okay, Dealey Plaza, the day Kennedy got shot. Okay, I'm picking up this bullet coming out of the Deltex building. You guys see that on yours? Yeah, okay. Oh, there was a shooter there. And so all conspiracies would all get resolved. There would be no more mysteries, really, if we could look back at history with an uncritical account that all of us could use, including our own past lives, how you'll know that this is very authentic. And the people, the accounts I've read who have used it on a personal level, we're going back, boy, all the way times of Egyptian, Atlantis, on this planet, and then even off planet in some very spectacular civilizations. So I think we all have a memory of this. And in a way, we know it's true because it resonates that way. If we could just perhaps see it on a holographic generator, yellow cube device, boy, we talk about curling up with a good novel at night. We would be able to let these things go. Kids are so hooked on these things today anyways, whatever it was all about, the things that we find the most important, that we could know for sure how everything went down in the past. And that would really, I think that would very quickly assist with the Great Awakening. Talk about the next killer app if we're all able to put that yellow cube app on our phones.
Yeah. Nobody. I saw you showed off one of your books there. I got another one, and I tell you, I am losing myself in this one because, you know, going in here, you know, I'm a pilot, and when you see stuff like this,
good eye, Aggie.
That's where I come alive. I would love to get in one of those things. And then, of course, there are other things here that we have time travel you're talking about. And there is, I tell you, and the first and the second presidential meetings with the extraterrestrials you cover in here. Yep. Folks, he's got a new one out now, but once you read that one, get a hold of this one because there is stuff in here that'll blow you away. I'm still coming down from the high of it.
So
what a great blurb, thank you.
Yeah, I'm ordering that as soon as we finish. The chat room, forgive me, I didn't write your name down. What about the German time machine clock? Thoughts?
Well, you could be referring to the Bell Die Glocke, which was their time machine. Yeah, well, again, it all ties together. Looking Glass is the umbrella, and it's got all these different arms, these all these different manifestations. And certainly Die Glock was the German contribution. Now, how did they get so advanced so fast? And this is a very important question. In fact, I get into it more in Beyond Esoteric with the Vril Society, which was then incorporated into the Thule Society, which Himmler was a part of, and Hess, and Hitler himself. I mean, they were really deeply into the occult. And a lot of this technology has ties with the occult. In fact, even on the Die Glock are these runes that look like they look like Nordic runes. Look at that, Augie. I mean, that looks just like Viking rune stones. And there it is. That is Die Glock. So from 33 until 45, these Nazi Germany scientists either discovered from prehistory an advanced civilization with some kind of UFO, of Vimana, which are talked about in the very ancient scripts of India, somewhere in the Middle East, or they simply used all their scientific discoveries in Europe from the 18th century onward and built on earlier discoveries. So they had a craft called the Hanibu, and they used a system in momentum and anti-time, which dragged static bubbles to some degree based on the Helmholtz resonance theory. Other branches of science involved the radar system of the magnetron and the potential time travel and space travel machine called the Bell. pictured here. Mm-hmm. The Germans developed a highly advanced space program with bases on Antarctica and Mars, where they first developed nanotechnology. So they were getting this stuff from the aliens. And before our scientists started whoring themselves out for technology, the Nazis were doing it. And the Nazis won the last two battles of World War II, ushering in the Fourth Reich. The first was a submarine battle right at the very end of what we call VE Day, Victory in Europe, when the armed forces of Germany were surrendering, but the Third Reich never surrendered. And literally more than 100 of these German U-boats went missing at the end of the war. Some of them popped up months later in Argentina and elsewhere, but for the majority were the Führer's convoy, and they were like large container ship size U-boats that could take down their best machinery. And they took it to Antarctica. And this was the Battle of High Jump, which confronted Admiral Byrd in 46. And they turned around with their tail between their legs, and Admiral Byrd quipped to someone of the Chilean journalists on board that we will be confronted with an enemy that has the ability to fly pole to pole at incredible speeds. That was in 1946. So here we are now going almost 80 years later, and they're still not telling us they have planes that can fly pole to pole at incredible speeds. So the Germans got it, but they were also allied with the reptilians. So when your listener was saying that they were pulling out the malevolent ETs, it were these ones, and also in Antarctica, and I have a pretty good idea where some of their bases are located. And this is what Admiral Byrd was going to try to take out, but they were absolutely routed in the Battle of High Jump. And that was the last two battles of World War II, and was not in our favor. But as they say, history is written by the winners, and they didn't want to put that in any of our history books. But you know where we get the best information? It's from the collapse of the Soviet Union. You could show up in Moscow with a suitcase full of hard currency like dollars, and you could get people to go into the KGB and pull out their alien files. And they have alien autopsy videos that have now surfaced and are on the internet. They have their own crash disk retrievals that they're out filming the whole thing. And they gave the whole breakdown of what happened in Antarctica. And maybe with a little schadenfreude in their voice, a little glee to sting it to the Americans, saying, hey, man, you got your ass handed to you. And we did.
Yeah.
And so that was an ongoing thing. And then we had the flyover in Washington, D.C. Remember that in 1952? Yep. Which at first everybody's like, there's aliens flying over the Capitol. No, they're not. Those were Nazi honeyboo crafts that could fly pole to pole at incredible speeds. And it was that display of force in which we couldn't do anything about. They could fly over our most sensitive airspace in the country, and we couldn't do anything about it. That's when the treaty was signed, hands-off kind of thing, and integrate the paperclip Nazis into America, and everything that came of the Nazification and the Fourth Reich in the Americas, which also is part of South America. When I was down there 3 years ago, Augie, I was traveling around and I was reading about these massive land holdings in Chile and Argentina, some of them as big as our small states, that were owned by Germans primarily, but they're very secretive. You can't even go near them. They're very well guarded, but it's sort of a secret in plain sight down there that the Germans are very wealthy and still can call the shots.
Yeah. And there are still land, I mean, big tracts of land where everybody speaks German down there.
There is. I visited them. And San Carlo de Bariloche is just like walking into a barbarian village.
Yeah.
And also up on La Falda in the hills above Cordoba, very Germanic areas of Argentina. And that's, incidentally, where a lot of the technology, the underground bases, and the Inelco house, which was a safe house for Hitler himself. There was a great TV show on the History Channel called Hunting Hitler. People are interested in some of these sites I'm talking about. Check out this show, because they go into great detail. And they even went ashore at the Inelco house saw that there were stove pipes for an underground base there and the waterway for a seaplane. So if the authorities were ever moving in on them down there in Patagonia, they just jump on their seaplane, fly right over the crest of the Andes Mountains, and then they're in Chile. What do you know? Another fascist dictator that the CIA installed. So now all this stuff starts to make really good sense, how the CIA was giving cover to the Fourth Reich in the Americas, down there in South America. And they were continuing to work on this technology. And some of the super soldiers that I meet at conferences that were part of the secret space program, well, the Germans had one too, one of the first. It was called the Nachtwaffen. And there are people that have memories, including Penny Bradley and some others who were part of it and could speak first person that they had experiences with the German secret space program, largely off planet. So there is this breakaway civilization of different humans from different cultural backgrounds that are now part of it. It's just truly astonishing when you think about the breadth and range of the whole human experience on this planet. You have the breakaway civilization, humans living off planet, even reproducing and having families off planet. And then you still have Stone Age people in the depths of the Amazon and high up in the valleys of Papua New Guinea who still get their dinner using a blowguard every night. It's just amazing this time we live in and how diverse the human species is.
Yeah, we know a lot of them went to base 211 and some of them to Argentina. And I found a document, and in fact, I got it on the screen here behind it all, where FBI in 1947, they have a document saying that they know Hitler is in Argentina.
Yeah.
They knew back then. Yeah. And of course, then they let Simon Wiesenthal, you know, the German Nazi hunter, they let him run around the world for 3 decades looking for leads, and they never told him. So there was a lot of sympathy within the American government with the Nazis, because if it wasn't, they would have told Wiesenthal where Hitler was. Yeah. But they didn't.
But they didn't. They got, Eichmann. And took him to Israel and put him on trial and hung him. He was the one. And my understanding is that really spooked the South American Nazis. And they put a lot of pressure on the CIA to not let Wiesenthal or any other of these Nazi hunters get too close on their trail. And it's a real travesty of justice, because so many of these people lived out their natural lives, including Hitler himself. I'm convinced he survived. I even talked to, I took a tour of the Eden Hotel in La Falda, and the History Channel was there doing the Hunting Hitler several episodes. And I know other shows have featured this chambermaid, a young lady. She was only in her teens post-war, and she remembers firsthand Hitler and Eva Braun. They were there. They got out. The U-boats took them out. They landed shortly after VE Day, and they moved around. They had a lot of safe houses, and again, you could watch a Hunting Hitler show to see them all. And Martin Bormann escaped too, and he was the money man. Look, you get the money out of there, and there are still many metric tons of gold and treasures and priceless paintings and artifacts like the Spear of Destiny that have gone missing, that have not been recovered. Some think maybe in a bunker in Antarctica. Others think maybe they're in someone's private collection in South America somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the more you peel the layers off of this onion, and as it ties into extraterrestrials, and then when you think about that they had the Bell technology, which was a time traveling device, that's a very powerful enemy that is not just going to lay down and roll over and play dead. No, they still had some fight in them, and that's what we saw with the Battle of High Jump.
You wonder where they took some of those things, because in 2003, I interviewed Wendell Stevens on my TV show in Tucson, and he said And he found, he was in South America, and he found a warehouse, a temperature and humidity controlled warehouse at a cluster, they called it. There were a monk that was running it. And he found that a lot of the paintings in that warehouse, way out in the wilderness. So, yeah, you're right. It's probably most of it in South America, hidden away for maybe someday to show up somewhere.
Well, even when I was there, there was a big news story of somebody's expensive home. The guy died, or however this room was found, but all kinds of high-ranking Nazi uniforms and badges and helmets and all kinds of things, everything you could imagine that was, could only have, of course, only have come from the Third Reich, but clearly Nazi sympathizers who have been there intergenerationally and keeping this going. And look, if you have the money like Martin Bormann did, and he was the number two guy at the end of the war, setting up all these parent companies, investing in American companies, and making sure that their paperclip Nazis were on the board of directors, including our NASA. We had Hermann Oberth and Wernher von Braun, the father of rocket science, putting a man on the moon, the Apollo missions. I mean, how much more powerful positions could these former Nazis have gotten? So you know that we wanted something from them really bad. And be careful what you wish for, because now we have a form of neo-fascism that has also infected this great country of ours. And well, that's why I start out my new book with a whole section called Neo-Fascism, because we really have to be able to understand what we're up against if we're going to attempt to fight it. That's the first law from Sun Tzu, The Art of War, is if you don't know your enemy, you don't have stand a chance in trying to defeat them. So we have to know what we're up against. And they have all the toys. They have the money, and they have the will to try to enforce this timeline too. And here we go back to the timelines. And it's been described by Carrie Cassidy as the timeline wars. And I agree with her. I think that's a very apt description of what we're up against. If you read these Guardian of the Looking Glass posts, they'll say there's about 70 false flags that have to be defeated before 2030. If we can get all of them, or almost all of them, then we can enter this golden age. But we have a rough couple years ahead of us. Even this year alone, I think, is very pivotal in keeping us on the track for Timeline One and the liberation of Earth. Nothing short of the liberation of the human race and this planet Earth is at stake. That's how important it is right now. So anybody who thinks that they don't play a role or can't do anything about it, just you thinking about it plays a very big role. And this is what the Great Awakening is. It will be this 100th monkey effect, this light bulb that goes off in everybody's mind, from the pygmies of Papua New Guinea and the breakaway civilization. We're all human beings. We're all the same family. So if this light bulb moment occurs, it should happen in all of us simultaneously. And then it's pretty much we're on track for the 1,000 years of peace and restoring this planet and making up for lost time and rediscovering this technology that has been squirreled away from us for so long.
So
I keep saying, go ahead.
We have about 6 minutes left. And how do we navigate this time, Brad? I mean, you know, everybody's like, yeah, love is the answer. And I know that's true. But how do we navigate this to, you know, be in the higher consciousness, to be in the higher frequencies, so we don't necessarily fall prey to things that happen on the lower energetic levels?
Yeah, it was said to me when I was in my journey to try to understand what I could do as an individual. It's real simple with the Buddhists and other people of Eastern faith is just be compassionate, be charitable, and be wise. And as we get older, we do get wiser. And that is one good thing about having a lifetime experiences that you can draw upon is that you can start to understand this worldview, and hopefully people will have their own perception of what we're going through. And that's how we do it, Nori. We just, it's waking up 101, and people are coming into this at their own pace, and that's just the way it's got to be. But I think the more people, we have the numbers, so the more people that can wake up, the sooner, the better. And if it's just one listener per show, then, I mean, we're not great numbers there, but maybe 100 per show. Hey, we're doing a pretty good job and trying to get people to turn off the mainstream media and really to follow what they perceive, their intuition tells them is the right path. But
that's why I keep talking about this mind-created universe that we are kind of infused into. Mind-created means that our mind is a big part of the creation of it. So whatever we allow to dwell in our mind is what we're going to end up with in our life and around us, in our environment, in our community, our country. And, you know, depends on how big we think. But we got to keep ourselves clean in our own mind as much as we can. Not worry about the garbage going on, the wars and all the crap that's out there. Just stay with our path, knowing it is going to be good. Visualize it, feel it, love it into existence in the future, and just keep going for it. I don't know. That's
well said. Yeah. Just keep going forward. Do the best you can do. And try to be part of the solution, not part of the problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a big gap to bridge now because of all of the separation that's been created, you know, with red and blue and vaxxed and not vaxxed. And, you know, that's a huge gap that we've got to bridge. And we can only bridge it with love and compassion.
Well said. Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. What's next for you now?
Yeah, well, I'm on my way out to Arizona for the Contact 2022 conference, third weekend of May in the beautiful Red Rock community of Sedona, Village of Oak Creek. And I'll be giving my Hidden Esoteric in Plain Sight presentation, as well as the Hidden Anomalies of Antarctica. Might be a workshop. I'm not sure how they're going to structure it, but I'm on par to do two presentations there. So touching on a lot of things that we spoke on tonight. And anybody wants to know more about me, you can go to bradolson.com. I also have a YouTube channel, although in this age of censorship, I'm worried about really voicing my opinion a little too much. So it's kind of gone dormant, but it's all the audio book chapters for the first two books. So you can listen in as an audiobook for free on my YouTube channel, CCC Publishing, Esoteric Series, and my name, you'd be able to find it. And then, of course, CCC Publishing is my publishing business, and any books ordered off of there go through my office, and I'm able to get a signed copy of Future Esoteric and Beyond and Modern Esoteric, which are all the traditions in the beginning. That's book one. So you got book two, I got book three, and it's all original content in each one of the books.
Yeah, that's good. Well, gosh, it looks like we're down towards the end here.
We are. Thank you.
Yeah, it flies when you're having fun.
Yeah, it sure is. So thank you very much, Brad, for being with us. This was wonderful.
Oh, my great pleasure, Augie. I hope to see you next month up at the conference.
Yeah.
It'll be good to connect with you again. We'll go out to dinner and have some good one-on-one time, and maybe Nori, we'll get you out to the West Coast one of these days.
I would love to go to Sedona.
All right, well,
I'm packed. Thanks, Brad. Out you. Sorry.
Okay.
Tucson too, Nori. You got to come see us in Tucson.
Maybe that's a possibility.
Okay, well, thank you, Brad. So we'll talk you into maybe visiting us again. That'll be good.
Take care. Anytime, Augie. You know I love talking with you guys. Right. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks,
all right. Yeah. Bye-bye.